Production. Recorded live.
Good morning. Welcome to 42 Minutes, where we discuss the answer to life, the universe, and everything. My name is Will Morgan. I'm here with my friend Doug Bowles. And today we have David Plate, a.k.a. DVD Platypus, a.k.a. MK Ultrasound, whose work you can find at beingthere723.blogspot.com. Excuse me. Today is the 27th of March, 2012. And how are you, Mr. Plate?
I'm doing good.
Fantastic. You know, you've been around the Synchrosphere for a while now. You have your blog, but you also have a Vimeo channel, too, as well. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I do.
And where can you find that?
Channel is MK Ultrasound. So I think if you go and you just type in MK Ultrasound for channels, it should just come up.
Okay. Now, I want to talk about Sharon Tate. Is everybody okay with that?
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Sure, but before we get there, it struck me last night how curious, we don't ever plan these shows, but they just kind of work out so that the guest ends up being exactly the right fit for the moment.
Right. Are you talking about Birdman?
Possibly.
Are you talking?
Well, no, so today is 327. Your blog is 723.
Oh, wow,
yeah. But then you also do a really deep focus on Kubrick, you know, and so this we're talking about room 237 now, or 217 if we're in the Stephen King text. But then
right.
Not only that, this is the 24th episode, and in the post that you directed both Will and I to was, you know, it was a 42 posts, looking at that as one of the primary focuses into the world. And of course, as you point out in the post, 723 or 237, you multiply those numbers and you get 42.
Yeah. Which is funny because when I put in 723, I wasn't even thinking about 237 at the time. I was thinking about Sirius and the Dog Star and 723 being the date of the beginning of the dog days. So the Scorcher days, you know, way back, you know, still now. But what they realized way back when, that's the hottest days of the year, you know. And so for whatever reason, when I was just coming up with my HTML or whatever,
I associate those together. The 723 and the 237 kind of go hand in hand, in my opinion.
Oh yeah,
because,
no,
But then they've turned. Let's see. Of course, 23, you know, is the 23 enigma. But then 27. It seems like Jake and Jim have really done some deep work. Point that at the moon.
Right.
So you get serious.
It's all related because like in 2001, how they get to the moon and they get to Jupiter. To me, Jupiter and Sirius are really tightly intertwined because Sirius is kind of like the second star. Do you know what I mean? And so is Jupiter, according to 2001, 2010.
I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying. It's interesting to me because I use, this is weird, but I use Head and Shoulders, right? And the other day.
Your scalp, Will? Procter & Gamble? Are you joking?
I'm coming off the top of my head. Anyways, the other day I was sitting there in the bathroom and I looked over at my Head and Shoulders and it said 23.7 fluid ounces. And immediately I thought of that. But right below it, the Head and Shoulder symbol is kind of like this little blue streak that makes the Christian fish. Because, you know, Philip K. Dick, his experience happened on, 73 or something. But it happened in February and March of 73, so he always called it 2/73.
Yeah, that's funny with Jesus Fish, because I was looking at the Jack in the Box logo and noticing that the O and the X are actually connected in the logo, so you can actually see the O and the X making a Jesus Fish, which is funny because now whenever I think of Jack in the Box, I think of The Shining because it's Jack in the box, in the cube of space, you know. And then the fact that he's one-dimensional at the end of the film when you zoom in on the picture, and there's this whole idea around him going through this whole entanglement where he's trying to avoid becoming one-dimensional because he doesn't, it's his ego breakdown or whatever, and it's all symbolic. But,
Now, the reason I mentioned Burning Man is because we had Anders Jones on the show, and one of Anders' first movies, which was Far From Home, was filmed in the city where they, which is right outside where they have the Burning Man. Before, it was the year he did the movie was the year before they started Burning Man. But we talked
about it. Gerlach?
Yeah, that's where his movie was filmed.
Oh, cool. Marilyn Monroe did a movie there, too. I forget what it's called. I'd have to look it up again. But yeah, I just found that. Pyramid Lake, actually. Pyramid Lake is right outside of there. There's a giant pyramid-like rock, the natural formation. And there's a huge Indian slaughter right outside of there that's super famous or whatever.
So. Huh. See, Jennifer Palmer's been to Burning Man, too. You as well, right?
Yeah, I go every year. I have a camp called Nexus, and we built a large pyrosphere, 92 flamethrowers, like 40 feet up in the air, giant sphere, all vectors, kind of looks like a three-dimensional kind of Flower of Life deal, but with fire shooting in every direction. It's pretty epic. I don't think we're building it this year, though. It's a lot of trouble.
Well, I mean, okay, so I wanted to bring up Sharon Tate because of one of the most iconic things that I think you've done, David, is the putting up of the John Lennon with the Rosemary's Baby, the John Lennon Imagine album cover with the Rosemary's Baby's poster.
Uh-huh.
And how they both have the face at the bottom, John Lennon's face and Mia Farrow's face.
Right.
And how that relates to Dakota, of course, right? Which is chapter 27 again.
Right. I was actually, there's a lot of things going on with that more recently. Like, it's pretty deep. Like, a lot of this stuff, it's so intricate that, like, I do the kind of lengthy blogs that I do just because it is so intricate, you know, and it's good to go through it step by step in order to see how the whole web fits together, because it really does, and it's almost, I don't know, it's almost eerie or, you know, kind of uncanny the way that some of it does. But I really do feel that on one basic level, you know, we as human beings, as we're developing, we create reference points in order to kind of assimilate ourselves and localize ourselves. And because that's kind of a substitute self, when we do that, you know, when things, our subconscious kind of shows us things to kind of point out to us that we're not able to be localized. And I think that generates, the reality of that generates a lot of fear. And we develop these reference points, this whole matrix superstructure, as a coping mechanism. So I think that when you're following a synchronicity and it leads towards the death of an iconic figure like, you know, John Lennon or, you know, whatever, like, it's, I don't know, I feel like it kind of, it carries a certain connotation which brings up a lot of fear, but that fear is there to work through, and so I think our subconscious is always kind of ahead of ourselves as far as that goes. So that's a really good example of, like, just loaded synchronicities with the Dakota and everything connected to that and how that keeps coming up with Sharon Tate. Does that?
Yes.
so fascinating because I started down that path because when we were in New York, we ended up going by the Dakota, and then Alan, you know, mentioned the surface sinks, you know, oh, this is where they filmed Rosemary's Baby and John Lennon was killed here, you know, and so, like, right there, that's like the entry into the rabbit hole. And then I started going into it, and I'm like, I don't want to do all this work. And then you pointed me exactly at all your work, and it's like, oh, wow, this guy's done it all. So, thank you.
Well, I've never heard of the movie Alice before.
The movie Alice, is that what you said?
Yeah, the movie Alice. I've never heard of the movie Alice before.
Yeah, it's a Woody Allen movie. And this is something that I just, like, I was in the middle of looking into this, and then I stumbled upon that, and I was like, wow, that's weird. Alice Tate. Her name is Alice Tate in the movie. And so I thought that was really strange. I really like that. Actually, I don't know how to phrase this. I don't know if I like it. But there's a Catholic holiday called the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, which is all about the, Mother Mary and obviously the Immaculate Conception. And basically, John Lennon died on that holiday. And it's interesting, too, because that is also the birthday of Jim Morrison. And it happens to be my birthday as well. I don't know if I would have, like, stumbled upon that so easily if it wasn't, December 8th is this holiday. And I thought that was really weird because, like, when you watch Rosemary's Baby, it's all about this kind of fucked up version of the Immaculate Conception, you know, where you're like, well, that's not quite right, you know. So it has interesting implications. You know, she was 8.5 months pregnant when she died, you know, and, I mean, that's kind of heavy. And then you get into the whole thing with Helter Skelter. It's like that's a Beatles reference, you know. Charles Manson, who kind of made this really bad name of acid, like people had a certain connotation when they heard of LSD up until Charles Manson. He kind of destroyed it, along with Altamont. And then you look into, like, you know, the whole fucked up side with the CIA where, you know, you have MK Ultra, but then you have Orange Sunshine and STP. They changed the acid. So what was LSD-25 turned into not the best chemical, it has a qualitative different thing going on with it, you know. So I thought that was really kind of weird, like, you know, there's this door in the whole Manson family's estate or whatever that they found that had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, all good children go to heaven, long before Abbey Road came out. And it's like, well, where did they get that lyric before Abbey Road? And it turns out, you know, they were in communication, most likely Paul McCartney. But still, it's this whole weird Beatles connection, and it's all kind of strange, and it's hard to know where, like, intention and whatever ends and where just synchronicity begins. I think that's, like, a big part of what we're all about here is, and not ultimately taking that position, because I don't think that's helpful. I think that kind of hinders progress in uncovering. As soon as you do take a position, you say, oh, this is what this means, and you pull out the fucking jump to conclusions board and take that position, because I don't think it's really that helpful ultimately to even, you know, assert that.
Well, I just think mere exploration of it leads you to not, like, one conclusion, but a couple of conclusions. You know what I mean?
Well, I like his work because it doesn't necessarily come to any, so I think my work is two-pointed, so, like, I'm looking
for
the, work, David, tends to just really go down the rabbit hole thoroughly, comprehensively, but then you just explore what's in front of you, and so your post goes on, and it keeps getting deeper and deeper and more intricate, and I think it's your writing style is fabulous. I can't believe it took us so long to really. It took me so long to get into you.
I don't expect anybody to read my whole post usually. Like, I figure if they read a quarter of it, they're going to be getting a lot out of it. And I go on and on because I'm driven. you know, it drives my girlfriend kind of crazy because I'll be up all night, you know, until I finish. Like, I do most of these posts in, like, one or two sittings.
Right.
And I just don't stop. And it's because the information accumulates, and then I just want to get it out. And I have kind of a manic episode around it. But I don't do it all the time, you know. I do it every so often when I'm ready, so.
I usually just scroll down your post because just the way that you lay the pictures out, I can get the gist of what you're talking about. And then when I see an interesting section that I want to know more about, I'll zero in on what you've got written there. Because, I mean, it's kind of multi-contextual because you've got book quotes and timelines and little blurbs in there and stuff from all over. So it's kind of, you kind of got a little Easter basket for me every time that I can just pick out what I need.
Mm-hmm.
On March 3rd,
we're talking about rabbit holes.
Uh-huh, the Alice in Wonderland, the new one when it came out.
Well, not only that, but we're coming up on
Easter. That was the 5th, actually, yeah.
So, like, as you're arising in our think net, you know, Easter is just on the horizon. So we're talking about bunnies and Jesus, and Easter is coming. I think it's not this Sunday, but the following Sunday, I think.
I want to explore something with you guys real quick. On March 3rd, the Corbett Report put up a podcast, episode 220, The Strange Case of Sirhan Sirhan. In it, he actually interviews this guy named Peter Lavenda. Have you ever heard of that guy?
What is it? Peter what?
Lavenda, Levenda.
Oh, I don't think so.
He wrote this book called Sinister Forces that has a lot to do with Sharon Tate and stuff. But basically, it's about Sirhan Sirhan, so he's dealing with kind of MK Ultra themes. And he talks about how Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate, right before John F. Kennedy died, had a dinner party with Kennedy where...
Yes, yeah, that's true. I looked into that. I didn't believe it when I first heard it. I was like, that's insane, but yeah.
And then they were with... Robert Kennedy the day before he died too with the Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate were at a dinner party with it was the last dinner, the last supper that Bobby had was with Roman Polanski and Sharon Tate again.
Yeah. It's very strange.
It is. It's fucking bizarre. So now what got me though was the fact that you know, because I went and kind of just peeked at the movie Bobby for a second and I realized that Lindsay Lohan's in it. And Lindsay Lohan is Jude, the person that Jared Leto in Chapter 27 tells the Roman Polanski stuff to.
Yeah, it's also, whenever you have an LL like that, it catches my attention because of Lamed Lamed, the Klipo, you know, you ever heard of the Klipo in Kabbalah? It's like the...
I'm trying to figure out LL, so please go ahead.
It's like it translates directly as shell or husk, but it's the name of what they would say of like, you know, people would say evil spirits, you know, coming from a kind of limited perspective on it. But it's basically, you know, the idea of these influencing forces that have kind of taken over the tree, and it has to do with the exile of the Shekinah and the divine feminine and all of that, and that basically the tree has been taken over by these different forces. And it's like a key thing in Kabbalah. Like if you read 16th century Kabbalistic text, it's like a pretty regular thing that they go into. And so Lamed Lamed, just to abbreviate it, not to say any demon names, you know, catches my attention because that's who basically is the head or the queen of the demons, you know, along with her male counterpart, the Samech Mem. So it always catches my attention whenever I hear an LL thing, you know, especially like in something like that. I'm like, what are they getting at, you know?
Well, see, that's the most famous, Lois Lane.
Lois Lane, totally.
Lois Lane, yeah, because I noticed it too, but I just associated it with Lilith, but I guess that would work too.
The same thing, yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. That's when I say Lamed Lamed, that's what I'm saying.
You're right. I wrote a post called When Lightning Strikes Twice about LL being Lamed Lamed because it's the cattle prod, right? So it's like the double lightning strike kind of kind of.
Sure, yeah, you go there with it because, you know, the tree itself is lightning. It's actually, like, it's so funny, like, you're reading, you know, 16th century text, and it's describing it as lightning, and it's just so appropriate because now we know 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, 24, like, Fibonacci, like, that's the pattern, you know, and when we see a lightning strike, it's a perfect symbol for insight because it's the pattern in a flash. It's like, here, it's encoded information of the nature of the structure of the dynamic of the vacuum, you know. So you know, it's like nature has a really poignant way of showing it to us, you know. I mean, we see it in ourselves, and we see it in trees, but when you see it in a lightning strike, it's like, do you get it yet? You know. So.
You know, Lindsay Lohan was offered the role of Sharon Tate too, right?
No, I never heard that. That's fucking perfect. No, I never heard that.
So I also want to talk to you about, well, first off, Doug, how are we doing on time?
We have tons of time.
Okay. I want to talk to David about his way of making videos with the kind of dark side of the moon technique.
Sure. Yeah. Well, when I was in junior high, I started, my brother showed me Dark Side of the Rainbow. Or at least he pointed me in the direction of the Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon, the classic thing. And since then, I've watched literally hundreds of movies with a select number of albums. And I've walked away at this point with about maybe 12 that I feel are just like, they reach a certain threshold that, you know, I mean, if you play anything with anything else, alignments happen. And that's a lot like, you know, in sync, is they just go on and on. That's why I feel like it's not all, that's another reason why I don't feel it's that helpful to jump to conclusions, because they keep coming, you know, like it's best not to say what this means for that reason. So, you know, I just try and remain open, but when it's like probability theory, it's like when you see enough alignments happen, not just musically, but lyrically, and where there's deeper meaning that you can extrapolate from the lyrics, like over and over and over again, some of them just so blatant, you know. It's like in the Wizard of Oz, Dark Side of the Moon, it's like in the end it's only round and round, and you see the witch's legs curl up, and it's just like, oh, you just said it, you know. And then she's wearing the slippers, you know. It's like there's something to that. So I basically just got to the point where I was like trying to show them to people for so many years in person, you know, to be like, okay, here's how you align it. And I usually use Technics 1200s just because I have the pitch control. So if I'm slightly off at the beginning, I can just make a minor adjustment, like I'm beat matching, and land on it and be like, there it is, and show it to people, you know. And then I was just like, well, fuck it, dude, I'm just going to get an editing program and make it happen, which has been kind of challenging, but I'm glad to get it out there. You know, Vimeo erased all my videos a while back, and I sent them a long letter explaining, like, legally why what I do falls under fair use and how it is actually legitimate research, you know. And they actually put them back up after I did that, which I was really stoked about. I was like, wow, you guys. Yeah, Vimeo did, yeah.
Huh. I've never really had any problem with Vimeo. Did they just yank them? I mean, how do you know that they're not playing?
They just shut down my whole account. And sent me a letter explaining why. They said basically that you violated copyright. And I think it was because I did this whole Black Swan thing. It was like, as long as I was staying with stuff that was like older, you know, like with the Shining and, you know, Charlotte's Web and The Land Before Time, they didn't really seem to care, I guess. And then Black Swan had just come out, and as an experiment, I played it with my own album that I had mixed, that I had DJed, and years ago, like maybe 7 years ago, and I had played it on my own with the film, and there was a certain alignment, and I was like, well, you know, I can't claim too much of a conspiracy here. I mean, I made this music, you know, I put this music together, you know, I made the composition, and so I was like, oh, well, that's something pretty far out, and so I decided to put it up, and I think that just because it was new, it caught their attention, you know. They probably have ways of doing that. But, you know, they put them back up, so I really can't complain. I was really stoked about that. And I don't know how long they'll stay up, you know, but they're up now, so that makes me stoked.
And how many do you have total?
Well, I think I have 12 or 13 I don't have them all up, but how many are on there? I don't know, 10, 11? I don't know.
Well, there's this new concept. Of course, I know you know who Bill Klaus is, and his ayahuasca blog. Recently, he was talking about how he actually puts on Pink Floyd albums and goes to movies. Have you ever done anything like that?
I haven't done it since I was in high school, but I appreciated that he was doing that. That's fun.
Yeah, he said he went to see John Carter and didn't even, like, totally toned out the movie, like put on headphones and listened to The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, I loved how he pointed out that the producer was Colin Wilson. You got Jim Morris and Colin Wilson. Colin Wilson, the writer who did The Outsider, it was a very influential book on Jim Morrison. Of Jim Morrison's. Jim Morrison was a huge fan of Colin Wilson, and so I thought that that was kind of funny. I wasn't sure if he got the significance of that initially, but then I guess he was pointing out that he did. I thought that was really great. It's one of my favorite books. If you ever get the chance to read The Outsider by Colin Wilson, it's a good one.
You know, I had my own run-ins with, I remember when, I don't know, it was probably close to 2001. It might have been actually the year 2001 when I realized that I had the VHS of The Wizard of Oz and I had the Dark Side of the Moon, and I was on a swing shift at a restaurant, so I would come home and I started trying it, and I kept having to get a better copy of The Wizard of Oz or get a, you know, an unscratched version of The Dark Side of the Moon. And by the time it was done, I had watched it every day that entire week. And by the last day, there was like six of us who were sitting down and watching this, right? Because we'd have to call a friend and say, bring it over, and then he would bring it over, and it wouldn't work right, so we'd have to call another friend, and both of those guys would come over. So there was like a whole shitload of us watching it on this one day when it finally all came together. And at first my brother was a little bit skeptical about it, and then finally he started like, oh, you know, there's something to this. Something's going on here. He goes off to the Virgin Islands a week later with my dad, and he's trying to explain it to my dad. My dad pretty much thinks all my kooky ideas are just absolutely nuts. But it was the 4th of July, and they walk up on a bar who's playing it in the Virgin Islands for the 4th of July celebration. They're playing The Wizard of Oz with The Dark Side of the Moon. Like, it's for the whole bar while everybody's partying. They're playing this. But my dad made a good point. You know, he said it's a very emotional movie. It's one of the greatest selling movies of all time, and it's one of the greatest selling albums of all time as well. And it's a very emotional album. So it's like you're putting like two of the most emotional, like impactful products together.
Right. That would be the argument for the Carl Jung approach to synchronicity, why there might be something to it as far as their archetypes, in a sense. Both things on their own, you put the two archetypes, which happen to coincide, they're like parallel archetypes. So, yeah, there's that idea, you know.
I like that. I like that explanation. But do you think that there's somebody, I know that you're a big fan of Morrison, of course, who shares your birthday, but do you find certain bands are more powerful, like Pink Floyd, The Doors?
Well, they're definitely tapped into something for sure. And they're also acknowledging, like, there's like key, like I say, archetypal stuff that certain people tap into. And it's like an interactive thing for them in the first place. And so for you to interact with that is a whole other level. But I consider the possibility that they freaking played it with it playing, you know, on screens. Like, that's how you make a soundtrack, you know. Like, I saw at one point they were making Titanic, and they got this whole orchestra and stuff, and then you got the film playing above them, and they're watching it, you know. That's possible. I mean, I'm not taking that position, you know. I can consider it seems like in the grand scheme, it would feel like that's more plausible. It's why people jump to conspiracy theories over all sorts of things. You get into 9/11 and it's like, no, that's just too much coincidence for this not, you know, for there not to be intention. But I don't, you know, I don't claim that. I can consider both sides, you know. But what was one I used to take as primary, I no longer take as primary, which is really great, which is what I love about the think community. I used to first consider the conspiracy and intent on things, first and foremost. If you're going to go about something in a scientific way, like it's probably better to do that, actually, than to look at supernatural. But then again, like what's primary? Like what's the foundation of what? It's like people can be playing their little conspiracy games and not even realize that the wiring under the board is actually controlling them, you know. So as far as influence goes, you know. So who knows?
It seems, this is one avenue that I always consider, too, that we don't really understand the quantum universe that we live in, that... So, you know, a lot of the quantum theory guys are saying, well, everything's connected. Okay, so what's the result of that? And then naturally there's bleed through into our reality.
Yeah.
So, like, you can connect. I mean, everything will connect, but some things definitely do connect much deeper and more meaningfully.
Yeah, I mean, you said if this was July 4th when your dad was watching it on the screen, you know, it was a July 4th party, and I immediately think of The Shining, that it's a July 4th ball at the end, and that was like, you know, one of the more far-out synchronicities I found with The Shining and The Doors, you know, which would have had to have been, if that was intentional, it would have to be Kubrick. Like, almost all the videos that I've done with music, it's like the album came out after the film, with the exception of like that and The Dark Crystal. The Dark Crystal with Saucy Full of Secrets is one of the ones that is more flawless, like as far as, you know, the correspondences go. And it has a really weird mystical edge considering that Saucy Full of Secrets, you know, the cover of it Hypnosis, the people who did the cover, you know, they put this image from Manly P. Hall, who's a 33rd degree Freemason, you know, on the cover, and his version of the alchemical formula, and that was very influential on Jim Henson, who is used to be a Christian Scientist, but got way mystical. Like, he's of the Packers Quemby School of Christian Science, not the Mary Baker Eddy School, which means he was more acknowledging of like the the occultist stuff on a certain level. You know, would acknowledge Kabbalah. Like, that's Dark Crystal is a very Kabbalistic film. You know,
right.
And then you have this like big time reference to Kabbalah on the cover of this album, you know, and there's this crazy amount of synchronicity there. But then it's like, if you want to say it was done intentionally, you got to acknowledge, first of all, that this is done by Jim Henson long after that album came out, you know, so I don't know.
If you're just joining us, we're about 30 minutes through 42 minutes today, and the 27th of March, episode number 24, and we're speaking with David Plate. Let's get back to 24. On one of the little images on your blog post that you shared with us, the what was that called? Singfreud Junglust, and the Helter Skelter Through the Looking Grass. That's an epic title too. There was a Shining image you had that had the numbers 1, 2, 4, 21. Do you remember that image?
What is it? I'm sorry.
It's just a number. It's a scene counter, I bet. So what happens in the Shining at 1, 24, 21?
Here's Johnny.
That's the Here's Johnny moment?
It's when he sticks his face in the door and goes, "Here's Johnny." You know, he whacks the axe 42 times, and then sticks his face in the door, he goes, "Here's Johnny." You know? Which is funny because it's a Johnny Carson reference, and then that was Mark David Chapman's other possible target was actually Johnny Carson, which is kind of weird. I don't know, you know, it's like there's these parallels that go on and on with John Lennon and The Shining. First of all, The Shining is the book from Stephen King is admittedly named after Instant Karma with We All Shine On. You know, that's where the title came from in the first place. When you look at Wendy in The Shining, like her opening scene, she's sitting there reading The Catcher in the Rye, which is what Mark David Chapman cited as his rationale for, you know, what he did. So it gets kind of weird when he's like, here's Johnny, and meanwhile that was his other target, you know. I don't know. But, yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. Those are T-shirts. That was an image that was put on a bunch of T-shirts of just that time, you know.
No, that whole thing is just so bizarre. When you go into that sync web, it just becomes more and more bizarre as you proceed.
Right. Well, there's the MK Ultra possibility, which is kind of, I don't know. It's difficult for a lot of people to digest, but it's like, you know, as far as possibility goes, it's like you have thousands of Americans who are experimented on, you know, and the Manchurian candidate was, you know, an aim of MK Ultra to create the assassin that doesn't realize that they're an assassin. And the number one thing at the top of their list is how to make people appear as crazy so they can cover their own tracks. So if somebody kills someone, they're crazy. Meanwhile, you know, Mark David Chapman, in his psychological profile, he openly states he identifies with Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, and he talked to Munchkins, and the Munchkins, the day he killed them, said, don't do it, don't do it, and he was like, oh, the Munchkins told me not to, but I did it anyway. It's like, what? He bought a copy of The Catcher in the Rye the day he killed him, or I guess within the 3 days when he went out there to kill him, and he also bought, for a bookmark for The Catcher in the Rye, a postcard of The Wizard of Oz. It's like,
right.
What the fuck is that about? Like, it's kind of, that's weird. So.
Well, then you have all these connections. I mean, that dinner party that Polanski and Tate were at was basically the guy who did the Manchurian Candidate asking JFK if it was okay to do.
Right. And so that gets interesting, too. Marilyn Manson, who did an incredible sync with The Holy Mountain, with his album Hollywood.
Adding Marilyn Manson to the mix, which your post does, is like, it's too much. I'm like breaking down at that point. It's like, I can't deal with this Marilyn Manson. Okay.
I had an experience at a Marilyn Manson concert a number of years ago where I dropped acid, and it was a full lunar eclipse, and I was at a Marilyn Manson concert, and I had like a flashback of something that happened to me in elementary school, where I was raised going to a Christian school, which I eventually got expelled from when I was older, when I was in middle school. But my elementary school, you know, I had beat myself in front of my whole school, basically, and I had blocked the memory of it. And it came up during a Marilyn Manson concert, and I hadn't thought of it in, you know, 18 years. And I was a kid. I was a little kid, and they were having me do this whole, you know, presentation with the rest of my class, you know, while everyone out there in the audience and my parents and everyone's parents and all the teachers are watching us. And it reconciled the experience for me. I went in or put myself back in the placement and saw my position and basically understood, you know, what that was coming out of and how. I had basically, you know, I was told at the time, you know, they sent me to a psychiatrist afterwards and everything, and just everyone just assumed it was all my own fault and that there was something incredibly wrong with me. And I was like, no, I realized at this concert that, no, there was nothing wrong with me. I was reacting to the circumstances. And as a child, I didn't know what to do because I was like, well, if I leave, they're going to, it's not going to be okay. I'm not allowed to leave. And if I just go with it, I'm feeling depressed. I was feeling depression as a small child. And so I just wanted them to see what they were doing to me. And so I had this whole, like, opening experience at this concert and allowing myself to feel angry, but angry for the right reasons. And not as much of an ego anger as, like, a realization of what's going on and how there's certain circumstances where it's okay to be angry, you know, especially, you know, I don't know, you know, anyways, I could see how it affected me for the rest of my life, especially the fact that it had turned into my shadow and how I had basically blocked it. And so I look at Marilyn Manson as something that's been very positive for me in my experience, you know. And then the fact that you look at the relationship with, I mean, I saw this connection between Holy Mountain and Hollywood before I found out that he was friends with Alejandro Jodorowsky and was actually supposed to be in his next film, which is yet to come out. I hope it comes out, you know. But, you know, and then you look at Marilyn Manson's newest stuff, and it's just like a Jodorowsky film. Like, directly, you can see he's blatantly making his version of Holy Mountain in, like, his latest video. I'm just like, wow, there you go, you know. But John Lennon was a secret contributor of Holy Mountain. And he actually says that in the commentary to Fondo and Liz, which he got chased out of Mexico for doing. You know, he doesn't say it in the Holy Mountain commentary. He says it in Fondo and Liz. So I thought that was interesting, too. They ran out of money, and John Lennon was the one who helped Holy Mountain be completed. So.
And I think he wanted to use George Harrison as the apprentice.
George Harrison said no because he didn't want to show his asshole. In that scene where they clean the guy's asshole when they're doing the whole alchemical process with him, George Harrison said he didn't want to do that, and then Jodorowsky said, oh, sorry, you're not in it then.
Well, we just have a minute left of this show. It's really been a lot of fun talking to you. I think we could probably do another couple shows. And then we need to get you in touch with Jason Barrera because you guys are into the same stuff right now. He's like knee-deep in Lolita and Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, wow.
The other side to this whole Rosemary's Baby side to Sharon Tate and everything. But I don't know who we're going to have next week. We'll have to figure that out. If you're interested in coming on 42 Minutes, please contact Will or I because we'd love to have you.
Oh, great.
Real fast, where can we access your work again, David?
Being there, 723.blogspot.com. And there's a link to all my other stuff there, too, including my Mixcloud, where I have my music mixes, and my Vimeo account. You can see it on the side panel there.
Okay, well, we'll see you next week. Take care, everyone.
Thank you.